Welcome to the Yokoji Zen Mountain Center podcast. Every month, we share at least one new talk on the practice of Zen Buddhism at cmc.org/podcast. You can also find us on iTunes, Spotify, and all other podcast apps. If you find these talks to be valuable, please consider supporting Yokoji by donating at cmc.org/donate. We rely on your support to continue sharing this life-changing practice. Thank you. We hope you enjoy the talk.
Good morning. Thank you all for showing up today. Today, I wanted to talk about some information arising out of the Bendoa, or Endeavor of the Way, from Master Dogen's Shobo Genzo, from the book Moon in the Dewdrop, which I think Rita, I was talking with Rita about that book, or emailing. One of the reasons that Dogen is so popular, you know, historically, is that he actually inherited like a lot of, he did koan study, and then when he was over there, he picked up 300 koans, and then he actually then put them into this Shobo Genzo. I think his initial goal was to do 100 fascicles. He just managed to do 90, I think, before he died. But the way that the koans were being taken and being practiced at the time was what wasn't really satisfactory. You know, as a lot of people were just taking it in a stylized way. So he wove all of these koans into a set of writing, basically like this. Now, many people say, you know, he just basically says it how it is, and it's true on one level, but also he layered it too. So there's a lot of study that goes along with it. And it is interesting too, is that there's one key fascicle in this Shobo Genzo, Treasure of the True Dharma Eye, which basically it is a key for all the others, and that is actualizing the fundamental point, or Genjo Koan. And when he was writing this, he was going to call every single fascicle with that actualizing the fundamental point as the first part of the title. So it'd be actualizing the fundamental point of everyday activity, actualizing the fundamental point of all-inclusive activity. But then he probably felt that that was kind of already apparent, so he didn't do it. But if you ever get into this book, which is probably the most influential fascicles, that's Moon in a Dewdrop. This is a very old copy. It's probably got a different cover by Kaz Tanahashi. You know, the most influential fascicles are in this book. There's one or two in, I'm trying to think of the name, Enlightenment Unfolds, which is a great title. So without any much more ado, I will talk about just several paragraphs in this thing, and I'm going to skip a bunch because there's a whole bunch of history in it which doesn't seem to be appropriate for a talk. So I'll do number one, number six, paragraphs 1 and 6. All Buddha Tathagatas who directly transmit inconceivable Dharma and actualize supreme perfect enlightenment have a wondrous way, unsurpassed and unconditioned. Only Buddhas transmit it to Buddhas without veering off. Self-fulfilling samadhi is its standard. Sitting upright, practicing Zen, is the authentic gate to the unconfined realm of this samadhi. Although this inconceivable Dharma is abundant in each person, it is not actualized without practice, and it is not experienced without realization. When you release it, it fills your hand. How could it be limited to one or many? When you speak it, it fills your mouth. It is not bounded by length or width. All Buddhas continuously abide in it, but leave no traces of consciousness in their illumination. Sentient beings continuously move about in it, but illumination is not manifested in their consciousness. The concentrated endeavor of the way that I'm speaking of allows all things to come forth in enlightenment and practice all-inclusiveness with detachment. Passing through the barrier and dropping off limitations, how could you be hindered by nodes in bamboo or knots in wood? I'm jumping up to 6. All this, however, does not appear within perception because it is unconstructedness in stillness. It is immediate realization. If practice and realization were two things, as it appears to an ordinary person, each could be recognized separately. But what can be met with recognition is not realization itself, because realization is not reached by a deluded mind. In stillness, mind and object merge in realization and go beyond enlightenment. Nevertheless, because you are in the state of self-fulfilling samadhi, without disturbing its quality or moving a particle, you extend the Buddha's great activity, the incomparably profound and subtle teaching. Grass, trees, and lands which are embraced by this teaching together radiate a great light and endlessly expound the inconceivable, profound Dharma. Grass, trees, and walls bring forth the teaching for all beings, common people as well as sages. And they, in accord, extend this Dharma for the sake of grass, trees, and walls. Thus, the realm of self-awakening and awakening others invariably holds the mark of realization with nothing lacking. And realization itself is manifested without ceasing for a moment. This being so, the Zazen of even one person at one moment imperceptibly accords with all things and fully resonates through all time. Thus, in the past, future, and present of the limitless universe, this Zazen carries on the Buddha's teaching endlessly. Each moment of Zazen is equally wholeness of practice, equally wholeness of realization. This is not only practice while sitting, it is like a hammer striking emptiness. Before and after, its exquisite peal permeates everywhere. How can it be limited to this moment? Hundreds of things all manifest original practice from the original face. It is impossible to measure. Know that even if all Buddhas of the Ten Directions, as innumerable as the sands of the Ganges, exert their strength, and with the Buddha's wisdom try to measure it, the merit of one person's Zazen, they will not be able to fully comprehend it. Sounds good? Isn't it? So I just wanted, you know, at the end, people ask him questions. So I just wanted to show you what Dogen was faced with at the time. So somebody says, we have now heard that the merit of Zazen is lofty and great, but an ignorant person may be doubtful and say, there are many gates for the Buddha Dharma. Why do you recommend Zazen exclusively? The answer, because it is the front gate for the Buddha Dharma. I agree with him, but it's great. He just sort of jumps in there. Now, the thing is, I'm not really talking about this thing called Bendawa or the endeavor of the way. You know, I'm talking about this. I mean, that's what Master Dogen's talking about as well, is the how do you really talk about it? How is it expressed? Because if you don't, it is very difficult to actually transmit this. So this is Dogen's main sort of talent that he has. that he can talk about these things from many different points and many different angles. And really, you know, at least the way I see it, this is a real encouragement for me to try and do it in whatever way. And I think, you know, this is really important just in terms of the life of human beings, is that we can save each other a lot of trouble if we learn really how to communicate, you know. It's happening all the time. How do we really communicate this? How can these things be transmitted? And that transmission is important. It's important in mechanics or in plumbing, in carpentry, in working with people, in working on computer, being able to transmit these things so that it makes it easier, say, for the next generation of people taking over. But there's one thing that's really important in this is inquiry and having an inquisitive mind. If somebody is inquisitive, they can, as you know, Dogen mentions in here, go aim towards all-inclusive study in this, so that you see that awareness is functioning 24/7. And so it is allowing that really to occur, and to allowing that inquiry, and then seeing how things are connected, and living in the midst of that. You know, in this particular, you know, fascicle, he talks a lot about trees, plants, tiles practicing alongside us. And it's true, never do we practice with the absence of those things. Many people come into practice and they want to set their own head straight or relieve their own suffering. But when you begin to enter into this and practice together, you see that everybody and everything is included in that process. And one of the things that practice actually does is you see that many people are practicing in many different ways. Their suffering is your suffering. Your suffering is their suffering on many levels. They may not feel it to the degree that you do, or vice versa. But, you know, this is the actual dealing with it that we do on a momentary basis. Now, many people who read Dogen will go, well, it's too involved. But if you read anybody's writing, you've got to understand where somebody comes from and why they express it in certain ways. It's like, you know, many people will come and go, well, you know, that's something from a foreign element. It's nothing to do with, you know, with how we live today. But with communication is that if somebody comes from another culture, how do you communicate with them? You can't just assume that they come from the same cultural constructs that you do. You've got to see how, even if they speak English, how they're using those words to communicate what it is that they really want. All of these things are basic awareness practice that occurs on a momentary basis. And we also have to realize, too, is that nobody can give you this. They can only point to it. Some of these words may, you know, awaken us on various levels. But at the same time, is that then is how do you practice that? So this so-called awakening or enlightenment is functioning on a momentary basis. You have to remember, enlightenment is not a state that is achieved at the end of one's life. It is the process of shedding one's light on wherever we stand. And this is what, you know, Dogen is talking about over and over. He's probably the only proponent through history, and I could be wrong on this. I need a scholar next to me or something. Gavin's not here, so I can't ask him. But you know, his main teaching is practice realization. Now, again, you know, we practice as human beings right from being little babies. We learn how to function in this world. This is practice. As we grow up, we practice. We practice how to memorize, how to learn things, how to integrate with our society. That practice, in many ways, is very natural as we occur. And at the same time, there is realization. There is this realization. It doesn't mean a realization that will occur in the future, although those things occur. It is making real, or the, you know, the direct experience of this over and over and over. This is the only realization that we have. Now, one of the things that, you know, many schools of Zen tend to do, especially in that division between the southern and northern schools, or instant enlightenment, gradual enlightenment, is that they tend to demean basic awareness, this awareness that we have moment by moment, in looking for this thing called enlightenment, which sounds very nice from the words of the Buddha and all of the ancient masters, but it's still an illusion. The only realization that you have is this. Now, if you practice this over and over, then at some point, the things that stand in the way, which are like conditioning, will begin to drop off. They won't impede you. Just like at the end of fascicle one, that or chapter one that Dogen's talking about in Endeavor of the Way, he said, passing through the barrier and dropping off limitations, how could you be hindered by nodes in bamboo or knots in wood? You know, and we look at our own minds, our own ingredients, and we think, well, because of our limitations, we'll never see this. Like I was talking with somebody earlier on in the week, and they were getting upset, and they said, well, I gave up trying, you know. And on one level, that could be a great thing if you're trying for something else. But in this case, what are you going to do if you don't see something? If something is not apparent to you, do you just give up? Because in reality is that your odds really diminish if you stop really looking at whatever is here. I'm putting it in a betting format now, you know, but the odds really diminish. If you keep at it one way or another, the light of your own awareness is going to cut through whatever is there. And then you'll see those things, is that you may not like the gnarly bits of your own mind, but you realize is that you come as a package. The world comes as a package. It will never fit your idea of perfection. You'll probably never fit your own idea of perfection, although I know some people that are God's gift to, you know, humanity. I'm sorry. But, you know, anyway, this basic awareness that we are, this practice realization, you're never apart from it. I had a Dharma sister when I was at UCLA that was a really good example of that. She would just get on with things. You know, it didn't matter what it was. If she needed to do work, she'd do work. If it was sitting, she'd just do sitting, just get on with it. And there was a real appreciation just of being able to see, hear, taste, touch, smell, think. Those amazing aspects of our own consciousness, which are our own consciousness that function 24/7. And yet we have to look in our own minds. The thing that holds us back from it is this distancing. Some point in the future, it will be, you know, when the real thing is that if you can practice in the midst of this moment in time, then more than likely you'll be able to practice in so-called that moment in time. Now, one of the problems with Zen writing, it tends to sort of take on a highfalutin sort of picture, basically pictures, or it did for me when I read it. I was going, well, my reality isn't quite like that. But part of it, this is the translation that each one of us has to do, is what are they talking about? Because usually these masters are really talking about my life, your life, because they have a life like you and me. Some of them talk about undigested teachings, and so they're never really put on a practical level. They haven't really learned how to do that. But with Dogen, you know, he puts something up there and then he brings it right back to how we practice. Now, you know, if I ever hear the words Buddha and Tathagata, immediately I, in my own mind, as I raise it up, you know, well, these are very important. Like the people from 2,000 years ago used to talk about this, so it sort of goes up. But really, you know, when they're talking about it, all awakened ones to thusness, or who have attained to thusness. Now, each one of us, I'm pretty sure, has attained to thus. Now, there's no depthometer there, but have you? Are you thus? So he's talking in that way, who directly transmit inconceivable, he says dharma here, but truth, or could be reality, and actualize supreme, perfect enlightenment. So again, you know, language like this, supreme, you know, means the best. So what does the mind do when you hear those things, supreme? Like in terms of one's own life, are you living the supreme? Are you living the supreme enlightenment in this way? You know, I mean, if you think an enlightenment is something else, then that's the penultimate. It's not the supreme. You know, if you're living it, there is nothing that surpasses this. Can you really see that? This is one of the hardest things to swallow. Is that how can this life be like supreme enlightenment or perfect enlightenment? Because always our minds have a picture that it could be, you know. People might love me. People might, you know, drop flowers all around me. You know, they might treat me with some respect, as Rodney Dangerfield would say, you know. But the thing is, we can always picture those things, but can you really swallow it? The whole earth is showing up on a momentary basis, the sky, the sun, the moon. And yet we think maybe there's something a bit better. You know, it's one of those things, the grass is always greener in our own minds, but it's very important to recognize that. You don't have to follow those roads. Those roads can be cut off for a period of time and go, okay, this is it. How do I really live this life? That it's hard to say. I've been given, you know, is here. How do I really use it to the best of my ability? You know, and then they use words like wondrous. You know, what does that? I mean, is that set of wonder, like something wonderful. Usually we put that in one or two categories, you know, like that movie was really wonderful, that person is really wonderful. But then there's the actual wonder of being in itself. If we drop the cliche of, yeah, I've done this, I've been here before, then you really see the wonder of being, which isn't conditioned on anything. You know, then you can see people like Master Rinzai, who would wake up in the morning and go, here I am, reborn in this crazy, wonderful world yet again. You know, this wonder, just like seeing a kid looking at his environment and letting it in. You know, maybe not even speaking, just, you know, like jaw dropping. You know, but I'm not saying we should do that, but relook at the cliche of living and go, you know, what is it that I have here? This is amazing on this level. And it goes, only Buddhas transmit it to Buddhas without veering off. Self-fulfilling samadhi is its standard. So we put this, we get rid of some of the Sanskrit or Pali language. Only awakened ones transmit it to awakened ones without veering off. Self-fulfilling oneness of concentration is its standard. Okay. So, and this is true, you know, if somebody is awakened, then they recognize the awakened teachings. There's no doubt about it. Like if I go to, say, a beginner and go, okay, here's the transmission. You know, well, what is that? You know, what does it imply, etc. Somebody who's really seen that will know. I teach like this. There is no problem there. There's no doubt in that way. Transmission occurs when it is seen to be occurring. It cannot be taken on by somebody that doesn't see that. If somebody just wants the ambience or the clothes of that particular teaching, the teaching will not be around the teaching of awakening. It'll be around appearances and look. And basically a self-serving thing rather than, it says here, self-fulfilling samadhi. Now, where it says self-fulfilling oneness of concentration is its standard, just look at your own life. You know, look and really see if there's anything lacking. Where it says self-fulfilling is that if you think that there's something missing, that's exactly the the work that needs to be done. Now, self-fulfilling, you have to remember, is that in Buddhism, the self is the whole shebang. It's not just me, I, etc. It's that everything's included in that. You know, it's like, you know, many times when I was, especially in the early days, you know, I was thinking, I'm really tired of teaching. I'm sick of this. You know, just I've had enough, and but then the question would come up is then where would I go? You know, what would I do? I mean, it's not that I don't have things to do. It's that teaching or this self-fulfilling aspect is going on 24/7. There's no other place to go. There's not a better place. You know, and it's the same thing with when I started practice when I was. You know, I didn't start sitting until I was 18. I didn't hear about Buddhism until that age. But when I was 16, I was a Christian. I still am, I guess, on one level. And I always said to myself, if I find something better, I will do it. Now, having done, you know, many kinds of therapy and had many good mentors, had many good teachers, there's nothing that surpasses this. There's no other place to go. It's not about method. You know, it's the direct realization of what I have been given since I was born. And then obviously implicit in that is that then how do I use this? Everything is here. This is this self-fulfilling part. You know, again, just referring to Maizumi Roshi's Inca poem for Master Tetsugen. He goes, play freely in self-fulfilling samadhi. Completion or lack thereof is of no concern. And this, you know, this is a beautiful statement. It's not dependent on what I think I am. Or what I have, or how complete I am, or what grade I'm in. You know, it's just like in karate, apparently, in the old days, is that they didn't have black belts. It was just that your belt got very dirty after years of practice. You know, it's not that you enter into ranks, it's that you realize basically what you are. You know, it's nothing to do with any kind of arrogance. Everything is here. All the ingredients are here no matter what. You know, self-fulfilling samadhi is its standard. I remember I was empowering one person and they were jumping to get the raksu, you know, and I was going, you still want something from me, don't you? You know, and it's, you know, that thing is, it's not about what comes in. It's what you are right from the beginning. That's the work. And in many ways, from that perspective, it's not that there's work. It's just dealing with those things that cause suffering. Suffering either here or out there. It doesn't really matter which direction it's coming from. That's the basic work of Buddhism, is to end that suffering. You know, over and over and over. And then, you know, Master Dogen, as usual, he doesn't just stay on the general. He goes into specifics. Your sitting upright practicing Zen is the authentic gate to the unconfined realm of this samadhi. And it is kind of interesting. It's true. It's like, I remember the first time I sat, nobody had told me anything about Buddhism. And I remember sitting there, and for the first time in my life is that my mind settled to a certain degree. I'm not saying, you know, it was clear, but I could feel that settling and being at home. And even though I could only sit for 3 minutes, it had the effect of going, this is something that I recognize. This is something that I want to actualize in my life. And that, you know, that's without any teaching of words. It's just embodying and sitting. And I've noticed this over and over and over with people that come into practice. It's something that is a recognition. It's like it draws us back home to who we are as human beings. So from there, I just wanted to bring in teachings from chapter 6. I'm not sure I'm going to get through all of this because it's already past the half hour mark. But I wanted to add a couple more parts because this part fits in with that last one about Zazen. He goes, all of this, however, does not appear within perception because it is unconstructedness in stillness. This is important about Zazen. This is more, information about Zazen. It's not that we're setting up a structure. The body's a structure. That's enough. We sit direct. We sit as a tower. Great. And then all the other things can be in place. He goes, all of this does not appear within perception because it is unconstructedness in stillness. It is immediate realization. And again, this isn't realization of something else. It's realization of thus. You have to remember that realization isn't just a aha, you know, which usually intellectually something dawns in that way. It's that this is making real because we are already real. It's like there was a statement by Doan Dohi, if you want to be a person of suchness or thusness, you should practice suchness or thusness without delay. Seeing as though you're already such a person, why worry about such a thing? So he goes on, if practice and realization were two things as it appears to an ordinary person, each could be recognized separately. But what can be met with recognition is not realization itself, because realization is not reached by a deluded mind. And what here, deluded, he basically means split. So while I'm here, there is a realization that I'm thinking of. That's the basis of delusion. It's directly experienced now. So that's when, you know, people go, well, I've had this great realization, you know, and immediately I'll say, drop it, let it go. Because then it becomes a thing, and that basis of delusion comes in. That's where so-called enlightenment becomes a delusion. When you hold on to something of having something else, if you throw it away, then there is the wonder of being able to just enter into this world in whatever way and not act, say, from an enlightened standpoint. Because that is a creation. It's not real on that level. I think I'll just take it this far for now and then just open it for any questions or comments. Obviously, I can deal with anything I've not said yet or read out. Okay.
Okay, so you can unmute yourselves and ask a question. You can also use that raise hand feature as we've been doing, and chat is open as well.
Okay, Bill, unmute yourself.
Thank you. Can you hear me now?
I can. Yeah.
Oh, good. Pressing down the bar. We use that word merit every time we do chat. He uses it here. And I've never really thought about this before, but I have a problem with that word.
Yeah.
It sounds like a merit badge. Is my rocket suit some sort of a merit badge for like a Boy Scout? Could you talk about merit a little bit?
No.
Thank you for your answer.
No. You disappeared. Where'd you go? Bill, you just disappeared.
I'm still here.
Yeah, I can't see you. Something happened to your computer.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
Yeah, my thing keeps pulling over.
Yeah. So actually, this is a good example of merit. You know, your work now has put you back in focus. So that's the merit of you moving the computer. It's existing right now. The thing is, if we hold onto merit, then our practice becomes about, I've earned these points, therefore I'm going to get these rewards, rather than going, you know, I'm living now. That was great to have been able to do that. Now, and it's kind of funny. It's one of the things, you know, we do the Obon ceremony. And that's usually done towards the end of a training period. And one of the major parts of Obon is to give away the merit that's been earned during that training period. So this has a big effect on some people, is they don't want to give that away, you know. The thing is that it feels a lot better to share whatever I have as a human being. Now, that's just me. I'm not saying it should be that way, but if I have some merit, yeah, take it. Let, you know, whoever needs it, take it. It's far better in that way, because it's not that I'm becoming a virtuous person. You know, it's the thing that if I have certain things, it's important to share it. And I think a lot of people feel that way too. It's not about accumulation and becoming the best of the best. If we do that, then let everybody be the best of the best.
Thank you.
Thank you. So Dogen's clear to you. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, Shinzan. Yeah,
you can you hear me?
I can now, yeah.
Okay, good. Thank you so much for this talk about enlightenment. Just the word becomes annoying to me.
Yeah.
Because it's become so, like, this catch-all cliche that's thrown around. And I think, you know, it's not a noun. You know, if we'd stop using it as a noun, it's not a noun.
Yeah.
As if it's some embodied thing walking around with a capital E. So just that idea of just continuing to shine light and realize whatever we're realizing right now.
Yeah.
So helpful. It sounds so simple, but it's really huge.
Yeah.
That concept of enlightenment, meaning just keep shining your light on whatever is before you.
Yeah.
So thank you so much.
Yeah, and it's ongoing. You know, I mean, it's just like, you know, the people that, you know, we would put the term to enlightened are usually the ones that live and die with that. It's not something that comes and goes. It's not something that, you know, shows up every now and then. They live and die with it because they know that it helps people around them.
And you're explicating that idea of realizing the realization is the realization of the moment. I mean,
not the moment.
I keep reminding myself. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. The moment that I'm having, not something to keep seeking after. As if there's some profound ideas or something out there that's suddenly going to clarify everything.
Yeah, yeah.
So thank you for spending time with us today. Very helpful.
Oh, you're welcome. Yeah, thank you.
Rita.
Good morning, everybody.
Yeah.
Thank you very much for this talk. It really dovetails with what I've been reading in Maizumi Roshi's book, Appreciate Your Life.
Yeah, he loved Dogen.
But I'm struggling with being aware in the moment.
Yeah.
And what really brought this home, because I thought I was doing pretty good.
Yeah, yeah.
And then the other day I'm driving, I glance up, and there's blue and red lights in my rear view mirror.
Yeah. I wonder what that is.
I pull over and I truly thought, oh my gosh, what did I do?
Yeah.
I had no idea. Truly, I had no idea.
Yeah.
And the officer said, you ran through that stop sign. And just spontaneously, I said, really?
Yeah, because
I must have.
Yeah.
So I guess my question is, I mean, obviously my mind was somewhere else when the car was at the stop sign. How do we really, really, really maintain awareness in this real moment?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you know, there's several things. Is, you know, doing it over and over, and obviously there's always lapses. In that way, maybe lapses is, you know, a bit of a negative word, but, you know, we can't always hold on to bright functioning. You know, sometimes we also process, but the main part of practice is to, you know, especially in the first few years, is really to put that container of being directly present and reactive within whatever it is that we're doing. That's like say at the center. Then usually once your awareness begins to pick up, then you're given duties to do, so that they coordinate with other people, and that also helps you to wake up in that way and be present to things. Now the second part is the study of the mind. Is you know, for life for myself, is I like to be relaxed, and I don't necessarily like to bring myself back into concentration. So I know that about myself, and I also know that about people around me as well. And so one of the things is, like, with the formal aspects of practice is the keeping that attention onto whatever it's doing. And a lot of the forms are based around that. So even in your house, you can put things that wake you up to this moment in time. But then it's also important to have those times so that you're not always, you know, putting a pressure on to yourself, just to have those times where you relax. You know, so that the mind doesn't get too brittle. You know, just I'm trying to really be present, you know, it's just so that in time is that the awareness becomes more of a container type mind where you are present and you're not following the desire to escape. Because yet usually as human beings, we have those two parts to us. But in time is you learn to relax in the midst of concentration. It's not something that you need to force. You know, I don't know. Did you ever see the movie Platoon?
I think I did.
Yeah, well, there's one point where you got these new guys and they've been put on points, so they're in front leading everybody through the jungle, and they're jumping at every noise that they hear, which is a bit like people when they first start to practice. You know, there's a forced awareness to be really present. And that, and then you've got something like the one of the old sergeants, and he's got his machine gun over his shoulders, and he's just walking through the jungle like this, and you think, well, you know, he's not very aware, you know, but he's relaxed. He's got a relaxed awareness, and he's, you know, he knows the sounds that are going on. He's used to the scenery. And he knows that if his mind is relaxed, he's a lot more able to react rather than being stiff. And so this, in terms of cultivation, is the best way to to practice. And so then a noise comes up that he knows is dangerous, the gun comes down and he's ready. And so this is more like what awareness practice develops into, is that the mind is awake and aware, but it doesn't need to be taken away. It doesn't need to be forced into concentration, because natural concentration is you are awake and you're and aware. But you know the things that take you away. Like, I don't like this, I'd rather be there than dreaming about Hawaii or wherever it is you'd like to be. You know, it's part of it is the study of the mind and being able to just let go of those things rather than getting it enmeshed in your own mind. Because as we know, you know, sometimes we get lost in our own world. We're thinking about something. And then sometimes that fantasy and the reality can get somewhat enmeshed, and it's hard to move from that. Whereas through practice, you'll be able to drop that and then immediately act in that respect. So it's application of that, and also the study of how the mind works, and then being able to let those things that occupy you, leave them on one side.
I guess I have a lot of work to do.
Yeah, everybody does it. You know, it's, none of this is complete. A couple of sessions ago, I walked into the Zendo, went and offered incense, came back and went right to my seat without doing the bows. And I was sitting down and I was going, something wrong here, you know. Then I realized, you know, the forms woke me up, but it was too late then. These things happen to us as human beings. So part of it is going, okay, that's happened. Is there anything I can do about it? I can't do anything about the past, but I can put things into place for the future.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
There's a question in chat from Ralph. Yeah. So if pure awareness in the moment is enlightenment, that means enlightenment is fleeting. Is our practice then a process of stringing these moments together like pearls on a string?
I like your writing. Yeah. You're postulating a statement. You know, enlightenment is this, shedding enlightenment and shedding the light of your awareness on whatever is occurring now. Yes, we do. You know, we go off in our minds to other places, but recognize that is part of our consciousness. Even being is not fixed. It's not like pure awareness. You end up in a state where you never go off. You know, like, so for instance, somebody asks about the pure Dharmakaya I forget the master now, but he goes, I always think of Conan in spring, where partridges chirp amongst the myriad grasses or something
fragrant
like that.
Fragrant blossoms.
So, you know, as human beings, our minds go in various ways. It's all part of the mind. The main thing is that be directly responsive to whatever's here. It's not that, you know, everything's going to be like a flat line there or like a bunch of pearls. You could say pearl, like mouse shit, say string with nothing on it. Melon. Yeah. It's just the mind conforms naturally to circumstances. It's not going to be like a one-colored state. You know, it's just like in the same way is that I may be going through loss and then I have to teach and then something, you know, I just conform to that activity. The mind does it. And then, you know, I can relax and read something, watch something, eat. The mind naturally conforms. It's not like you're trying to force the mind to go in a direction. The mind is like this, always has been like this. So explore it. And in that process, you'll see what's unnatural and what's natural for you as a human being. You know? But again, it's an endless study because the mind is endless in that way. And it's not something that you can work out in your head. Because look at the size of your head and then look at the size of the world. You know, you're not going to be able to fit those in.
Cool. He said, thank you, Roshi.
Thank you.
Ryan?
Hey, Ryan, you're on.
Good morning.
Morning.
First, I just want to say thanks for your talks and over the COVID year. And thanks for everyone for asking questions, because I always appreciate hearing people's questions as I listen to these. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. What I made me think of is when I first started sitting, I mean, I always wanted to like achieve like, you know, samadhi, that word. And I had this idea what I thought it looked like.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's like a lot of pressure to sit a certain way. And it feels like lately I've just kind of, I have let it go. And it's kind of just sitting with, actually just sitting and not trying to achieve the state of mind. And it's actually easier to sit, you know, and it's more refreshing. It's just being. And so is that kind of what Dogen, I mean, is that what he's kind of talking about? It's just letting it all come in and not, you know, forcing for some certain direction.
Well, yeah, you know, when direction is needed, then you follow directions. When it's not, then just experience the world. Like in Shikantaza, for instance, or just sit, hit, mind. Basically what it means, be in contact with whatever's here. So instead of going towards something, basically you're seeing what is here, what is already here. That is the base of it. Now, this word samadhi is very nebulous. Literally means oneness, concentration. So you're not separate from whatever's going on. And so there's the samadhi of work. There's a samadhi of play. There's a samadhi of sitting. And we are familiar with those things, especially in areas that we like or that we're good at. We lose ourselves in, and that's the most important part of samadhi. It's not an objective thing about I'm feeling this way. It doesn't matter how you feel. It's just you're it. You know, and that's the beauty of it. And when you see that that's functioning wherever you stand, then it becomes, you know, it becomes easier just to live in that way.
Okay. And sometimes I feel like at work is, so I see like you're saying in the nice thing.
Like, you sound like a lawyer.
I guess this is where my struggle is. And I guess you alluded to, like when I'm working and there's like a lot of pressure and stress coming in, and that's where I start seeing the mind saying, ooh, I'd just much rather take a nap than deal with, you know, all these things coming in. And, you know, and I guess that's where it's like, I do practice there and I see it, but the truth is like, I don't want to do it. Like, I don't deal with that pressure. I guess it's hard. And I have this idea that I should have a certain focus or it shouldn't be this troublesome, but maybe it's just, that's just what it is.
Yeah. I mean, rather than doing that, you know, it's better. Well, do I need to do this now? And then if you do, then better to do it to the hilt and bring all your energies to bear on that one thing.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. And then the other thing is that then the question is then how do I take the stress off?
And usually it's just doing it. I mean, the truth is instead of thinking about it, just, I really just get it done. Just get at it.
Yeah. 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 Yeah, and definitely, you know, I mean, that's the thing is that the stress usually, I mean, obviously there is the stress of the situation in itself. And then quite often then there's things that we add. Those things can be taken off. You know, through practice, they don't immediately evaporate, you know. Yeah. No, I mean, it's just like when we couldn't leave the center after the floods, and the road was eating back towards the buildings. There was stress there, but there was stress that I could take off. Is like that I don't have an awful lot of control over this, but these are the things that I can do. So don't worry about that. Just deal with what you can do. And so that's a better way of dealing with stress rather than taking it as a fact and leaving it be. It's like, what is this? How does it function? And then see the extra that you carry and try and throw it away.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. Okay, Ryan, it's good seeing you. Thanks for coming for session.
Yeah, and I appreciate it. It was wonderful to be up there. So thank you. And good to see everyone up there as well.
Good.
Thanks, Ryan. Let's see. To this view.
Okay. Got a 5 minutes. Yeah, I think Terry and Penny, good.
Morning, Roshi. Thank you for your talk.
You're welcome.
Good to see you again. So if I could kind of sum this, what we've been talking about last few questions and parts of your talk, if I'm looking for realization or enlightenment, and I want to have it, then that's really not much use to me, because that's more like the novice soldiers in your example from Platoon.
Yeah, yeah, going, yeah.
Where is it? Where is it? And if I just be thus, mm-hmm. and just let things happen, then I'm the veteran that's relaxed and dealing mm-hmm. with things as they come, and that's that's more truly realization than mm-hmm. than having something that I'm trying to attach to.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, having never been a soldier, you might want to talk with Bill about that, but you know, the thing is, you can't overlay anything over your life for very long, you know. The important thing here is really appreciate being in itself. I'd like to say, well, it's not a movement, but in certain ways it is. You have to wear out movement, you know. You know, because like me, it was like an A to B thing. I have to go from delusion to enlightenment until that was worn out. And that took a long time for me. Everybody's journey is different.
Yeah.
You know,
there's certain things, and I see that. I know there's things I've had to wear out and things I'm still working on.
Yeah, and in karate is that I'm sure you went into katas and you did those katas over and over until you didn't need those katas anymore and you could leave them on one side. But when you needed the forms of those things, you brought them back in.
Right, right. Yeah, exactly.
And so part of it is, you know, with so-called spiritual practices, you know, what do you want? You know, what is your goal? And like, you know, for me is I finally brought my own thing is I want to be at peace. I want to love. I want to enjoy my life because nobody else will do it for me. And I want to be of service. And so once I brought those out onto the surface, I realized they're practices. That much I know peace, practice it. And I've got all day to do it. It doesn't have to be an end to it. And the same with each one of the others, with love, you know. And can I live with the decisions that I make along those lines? You know, and enjoyment is that if I'm doing something that's difficult, that's where the challenge is. How can I enjoy this? And I mean, and that goes for everything from removing the stress or whatever to playing like I did when I was a kid. You know, I remember one of the jobs that that I would do for my parents was taking off wallpaper. And they would, you know, and so, you know, as a 10-year-old, I'm doing this, you know, how can I enjoy this? You know, so then it becomes a matter of conquering the world. You know, But then you drop that. But you learn as an adult how you spoil doing things. A person like me shouldn't be doing this. You know, somebody else of lesser qualification should be doing this. And I, you know, rather than going, here I am doing this, how can I enjoy it? And then find a way of doing it. Yeah. You know, so then it becomes more imminent, you know. And so instead of being a linear A to B thing, is that be the destination. So know what you want to turn out like, practice that. Then you don't have to go anywhere.
I appreciate all those things, and I'm certainly aboard on all of those points. I remember once, I was running a karate promotion, and you know, here I am the guy running it, the head dude there, kind of, but that doesn't matter. But so I see one of my students' fathers come into the door, and all the seating is full, and but there's like a couple chairs stacked somewhere. So as soon as I see him, without even thinking, I jump up, run over, pull out a chair, well, invite him in, and invite him to sit down. And he does, and afterwards, actually, his wife was one of my students too. And afterwards, his wife said he was so impressed that the guy running the thing would get up and do that. That he'd never heard of that before. Some lackey would get up in this, and I didn't even think anything about it. That was my nature.
So, exactly.
So anyway, thank you.
Thank you. How are we doing?
You're at 10:01.
Okay. So any last thoughts, or we're going to... All right. Jindo.
Well, I was just curious, tying it back to the line from the Dogen about the unconstructed stillness.
Just
what that can be.
Yeah.
The idea that, you know, if you don't construct anything, if you don't lay a story on top of it, it should be this way or it shouldn't be that way.
Yeah, yeah.
It's going to be this way if I do this and that, or I can make it not be that. You know, if it's unconstructed... And then the stillness was making me think that, like, if you just let it happen, kind of, it's going to happen. And it was making me think of, it's like if you're on a boat, and, you know, sometimes you see, like, kids, like, run up to the to the bow of the boat, and it's like, you know, you're on the boat's moving.
Yeah.
You're still going to get there. It's still going to happen. You can't stop it from happening. If you're being still... doesn't mean like you're dead in the water. It just means let it happen as it's going to happen.
Yeah.
And then just how that relates with sort of what other folks were saying, whether it's like, you know.
I think this is one of Master Dogen's most profound statements. So all of this occurs because, you know, I think he says Zazen is practice. Let's see, all of this does not appear within perception because it is unconstructedness in stillness. It is immediate realization. So that's synonymous for shikantaza, or just sitting, or just it's unconstructed. And then we can see if there's any constructions there. Yeah.
But things are still happening because that's...
Yeah, exactly.
Where life is. It's not like you're dead and you're still in... in the water, it's like you're still
in fact the whole world is doing that.
And if you don't construct something and try to say this is moving, that isn't moving, and just let it be the way that it is, going back to like the platoon and the other ideas of, you don't have to you don't have to add, it happens on it, you know, you just have to be responsive to it. So yeah, that was, I guess, hearing that line when you read it, and then sort of hearing what other people said and how it relates was kind of matching it up.
And again, you know, it's important to see what those constructions are. So for a period, take up that unconstructedness and just see what happens. And then in that process, you'll see what your constructions are, you know, how the world could be, should be, how this is going to turn out, etc. But then seeing it and seeing that it doesn't actually happen that way becomes easier to let go of those things.
Yeah. And I guess Zazen is a good way to practice.
Like, yeah, yeah. I mean, that. Yeah, I mean, for myself, is nothing's going on. And so therefore, it's the easiest to see things, you know. I'm a lot more receptive, you know. If I'm sitting there watching TV, I don't hear the mountain lion outside, you know. It's that if there's nothing going on, it's easier for the world to come in. And then which has the tendency then to supplant one's self-involvement, you know, in that way. That's one of the biggest things of Zazen. It, you know, we tend to fall into place.
Okay.
Q.
Thanks.
Q. Right, good seeing you.
Thanks, Jindo.
All right. Time for socialization.